Welcome to Software Gone Wild, a podcast focused on everything SDN-ish. And one of the most popular SDN-ish things these days is definitely network services orchestration systems. And if you start talking about that category, someone will immediately say, well, you know, there's this Swedish company that does this fantastic product that's used by AT&T and Deutsche Telekom and a number of other people. Well, unfortunately, that Swedish company is no longer a Swedish company. Anyway, let's hope for the best. Let's hope that the fantastic Swedish company will continue developing a fantastic product within its new mothership. But whenever you talk about new products, they all look great in PowerPoint. Demos are fantastic. Videos are great. The feature list is exactly what you need. But does it really perform in practice? Because you know that everything works great in PowerPoint. That's the question we'll try to answer today. And to help me answer this question, I have two gentlemen that actually have hands-on experience with DLF because they were developing additional functionality to implement particular requirements with DLF orchestration system. So, shall I start alphabetically? So, you're the first one, Bustian Schuster.
Okay. Hi, my name is Bustian Schuster, and I've been working with automation for quite some time, and when I was first shown the DLF NCS system, I sort of felt sad because a long time ago I had a similar idea, which unfortunately I never got to implement it. Yeah, later we'll talk about some technical details and the ones that I think are very, very nice. But just for the introduction, so I'm otherwise, let's say, a fan of scripting. So that's the part that I've been doing in the past 20 years when I try to automate something. But we'll see that DLF's product has a sort of more structured approach to it.
And by the way, talking about scripting, you were probably the guy that helped me develop that SDN solution in 1992.
Which one are you talking about?
Oh, yeah, exactly. So in one of the blog posts, I wrote how we provisioned the access server for our internet service when we would build the router configuration and download it to the actual access server. And I said, well, guys, if this doesn't qualify as SDN, I don't know what does. And that was done in 92 or so.
No, not 92.
No?
I wasn't here then.
Okay, so
there is another product that you actually started. So with typical, let's say, automation approach, a long time ago when we were first creating our remote labs that were accessed via ISDN, if you remember, you did the standardization. So you standardized the topology that could be reused by many different labs.
Oh, that
and
one, yeah.
And upon your standardization, I automated the provisioning of that system.
Ah, so you're the author of that spaghetti code.
Yeah, so just like Microsoft brags that their Windows Update service is a cloud solution, so is our remote labs, which goes way back into the previous millennium.
Yeah, well, we had a cloud solution before it was called a cloud solution.
Exactly.
We just didn't know it was a cloud. And we had SDN before SDN was invented. We just didn't know.
It's just new
SDN.
Terminology.
Yeah.
And you can find some really old stuff that use the same approach. Yeah.
Well, you know, RFC 1925 comes to mind. For every old technology, it will be sold in new clothes. Anyway, the other guest we have today is Marco Tischler. And you probably don't go that far back with scripting and automation. At least you look younger.
Well, he's younger.
No, I'm definitely younger. I did some scripting in my time, but not as much as my colleague here. I have experienced on the other side all the pains of network management.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, I think we all did. So, especially in the operator carrier sector and wireless and mobile. And I was really excited when I saw that somebody actually took the standardized route with Yang and NetConf and implemented something that's supposedly going to cover all the vendor aspects of network management. And that's how I kind of ended up working with DLF solution.
By the way, just to give a bit more background, you're both networking engineers, right?
That's right.
That's right.
And at least you have your four digits.
Yeah, so for a time being, that looked nice. Now I feel old having a four-digit CCIE number.
By now, they're probably six digits, right? No, it's five.
I don't think so. It's still
five.
Yeah.
So how did you get from being a networking engineer into programming and scripting and network automation?
Well, I always had that desire that whenever there was a menial task to do, if I knew that it will take me 1 hour to do some repetitive work, I prefer to invest 2 hours in creating a script to automate it. So it shows my interest in scripting and automation, maybe not so much in time management, but still, it's a learning experience and you often get to reuse your knowledge or scripts later on for some other tasks. So if you look at my laptop, there is a history of an enormous amount of scripts that were used for various purposes, and occasionally some actually get into production environments, let's say, but some other people have to take a look at them because I'm usually the quick and dirty solution guy, so.
Yeah, well, I remember.
And that's one of the very common problems with typical scripting, which I'll probably mention later on as well.
Yeah, you go for the quick solution and then it's totally spaghetti code.
When it works, job is done, then you go away.
Yeah. Oh, I have to include that poster with that guy sitting on a potty and saying, no job is finished till the paperwork is done.
Exactly, yeah.
That has to go into the show notes. So
if I look at all my scripts and try to map them to documentation, the second part would be very short.
You mean the paperwork?
The paperwork.
Yeah. Anyway, let's move forward to what TailF is doing with its NCS product. So assuming I never heard about NCS, how would you describe it?
Okay, so there are some misconceptions about, management products and what people would expect from yet another management or provisioning product in the huge range that are available right now. And being that this is just an audio session, so I cannot really visually describe, but I will try to explain.
You can use the virtual whiteboard.
Exactly. So the virtual whiteboard is that there is, let's say, a spectrum from one end to the other, let's say two extremes, and I will try to describe two extremes and then try to position TailF in there. So on one hand side, you have, let's say, point solutions, management products that were designed to support one or a small number of different types of services that support one or a small number of vendor devices. And those products, you know, typically you buy them, you install them, some initial work, but more or less out of the box, you get what the product or the documentation said that you will get. On the other side of the spectrum, which is widely used in service providers, is in-house custom-built scripts, which is what, let's say, I also do in our company very often. So you have these two extremes. Do everything yourself or buy it and get whatever you get with the product. And, of course, there is a lot of stuff in between. So today we see a lot more orchestration products that are a little bit more flexible so you can create many different things. But I would position NCS somewhere in the middle, but closer to the scripting environment, because out of the box, you don't get support for any, let's say, known service that you would typically use in service provider environments. So you buy, you install the product. There is no, you know, layer 3 MPLS VPN. You put a checkbox next to it, design a service. It doesn't exist. On the other hand, it's not a scripting tool. So what you get is a modeling environment that allows you to model your services and basically allows you to quickly, easily get to your service, the one that you want to have, not what someone else has decided for you and sort of hard-coded it into a management product. But on the other hand, you don't have to do any scripting in terms of communication with devices, whether it's through a CLI over SSH or whether it's through some web portal or REST or whatever management protocol is used for individual devices. So that part, let's say, is handled by NCS. So you get the so-called network element drivers that allow you to easily and reliably communicate with the devices. Of course, the future direction being that everyone will eventually support NetConf.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Let's hope and see that this will happen. Cisco has promised that they will lead the charge. Juniper is already there. So hopefully this will happen.
Give me the year.
Let's say, that's one thing.
Multiply by two and take the next higher time unit, right?
Yeah. And of course, you don't have to deal with, let's say, when I create, you know, I've had this script that sort of was able to deal with Cisco CLI, you know, and it could do wonders. But let's say if I ever had to deploy something using my script, you know, I could create a configuration file and it would just push it onto a bunch of routers. The biggest one we had was 800 routers that were, let's say, had some changes provisioned through my script. But of course, there is always a problem. What if out of those five commands, three succeed and then one fails? What do you do then? So I have to do that myself. I have to do error control. I have to consider what happens, how to go back.
So you did that.
I actually did that using my script. Yeah.
So you're in the top 5%, by the way.
Yeah. Anyway, all these kind of the tough part has been addressed by the NCS product. So what I'm interested in is designing and implementing a service model, mapping that to device configurations, but how configuration management is done has been done by this product. So it does network-wide transactions, which means that my service can perhaps touch five different types of devices, and it's network-wide, and it means that if one single item fails, it will roll back all changes that are part of one network-wide transaction. So this is a very tough nut to crack. If you're doing scripting, here that part is done for you. And you're only concerned with the final solution, what the service should look like, what the configuration should be for this kind of service, and you don't really have to think about how service instances can be modified, deleted, that part. So that's why I would say it's closer to the scripting part, because it gives you a lot of customization. And out of the box, this kind of modeling, let's say, you can do a lot of stuff with just modeling using Young as the data modeling language. But of course, in every production environment, there will be some more complex requirements. So the framework also allows you to do a lot of coding around it. So you can, it provides you sort of callback functionality where you can do simple Java code to do mapping of service parameters into configuration items, or to retrieve information from external systems such as the inventory, or do some complex calculations just to offload the operator. So the end result should be a reliable environment where the minimum possibility exists for the operator to make a mistake. So that it's, in the end, it has to be simple for the operator, and it has to be simple for the designer, and it has to be simple to maintain, which in essence allows you to quickly design new services. So this is now we're going into the marketing area. And reduce costs. So that would be, let's say, from the marketing perspective. But once you actually look at how you design a service, it's basically writing a text file. Maybe you can have some more advanced tools if you wish. But all that complex scripting stuff is typically not required, although you can also integrate it with scripts. So it has a lot of APIs, northbound, southbound. So it really gives you a lot of freedom. And that's why, I guess Marco will agree, the right name for it is, it's a very powerful framework.
Yeah. So also from my experience as a short-lived software developer, I would say that this is more of a framework than a final product that you're going to put into your production system and just use. It gives you a lot of flexibility. It gives you a lot of different choices you can make, design choices, use cases, whatever you want. But in the end, it forces you to implement some functionalities, to write your own code yourself. And there is no way around it, but that's where it gets its power from. And what Bushkian said about any device essentially being supported, so it doesn't matter which vendor provides your network elements, it can support any of those devices. However, in reality, it showed when we were using it that only a certain percent of those functionalities available in the actual device are implemented in the existing drivers. So one of the challenges you might find yourself facing is that you may need to extend that driver yourself as well.
Okay, so let's go down that particular one. This is interesting. If I understand correctly, they use Yang internally.
For almost everything. Yes.
Yeah, so Yang is a way of describing the schema of your data.
It's actually also the way of describing NCS itself. Because NCS itself is modeled by Yang, so it's very easy to extend it. You could do basically whatever you want on top of the core engine just by extending the Yang models.
So you effectively extend the data model of the default data model of NCS. You can add your objects, you can add new variables, you can add new parameters, and so on.
To put it simply, there is this configuration database that holds everything. So in the configuration database, you have parameters that describe the server itself. So this is what Marco mentioned. You have the data models that describe the core components, the data part, and you graft on top of that the configuration of devices. So it's a single point of configuration management, so it has to be in sync with your end devices, which means that the moment you add a new device to the solution, it will try to sync its configuration, the parts that it understands. It may not understand everything, but what it does, it will sort of suck into its own configuration, and try to maintain synchronization. So everything is done then with data, and all that is described using YAML. So both the device configurations and the configuration, let's say everything else that you will find in MCS. So it's very easy, not just for, let's say, users of the product, but also for the developers of the product to add new functionality, augment it, because very often they don't even need to do any coding for new functionality. They just have to modify the existing models that describe it. Yeah.
So coming back to the device, to the configuration drivers, if you wish. Now, the data model you get with MCS out of the box, I'm just making this up. For example, on a Cisco router, it supports layer 2 interfaces, layer 3 interfaces, routing protocols, VRFs, and a few other things. But if you want to implement something that is outside of this data model, so, for example, you want to implement Apple Talk Route.
Okay. I don't know why you would want to do that, but let's say.
It's so crazy an idea that it's definitely not in MCS.
I don't think it's even in iOS anymore, so.
Okay, let's make it CLS routing then.
Okay.
Or SNA or DECnet or whatever you wish. That is definitely not supported by MCS. So you have to extend the data model to describe DECnet node number, for example, and DECnet cost on an interface. And then you have to modify the device driver so that it can generate the configuration commands to support DECnet on the device and on the interfaces.
Yes. So let's first start from a higher level. So how, let's say, in a real practical environment, before Taylef was acquired by Cisco, I can say that Taylef was very customer-oriented. So this part requires some additional knowledge, not just basic young knowledge, but also there is a lot of additional functionality that comes with young inside NCS, because you have some additional annotations that control how actual young data model is converted, for instance, into Cisco IOS CLI. Mm-hmm. So with the same young, you can describe how CLI behaves. Now, you're an expert in this area. You know how many dependencies there are between commands. Sometimes some things are optional. Sometimes you go into sub-configuration mode. So all this stuff cannot be described with the standard YAML, but there are some additional options available that allow you to control how this YAML model will be converted eventually into Cisco IOS CLI. I actually was working on that as well. So there is a learning curve. So you need to learn about all those there. I'm guessing now, but something like 50 or more, those additional options that control how this model will be converted into the CLI. But mentioning before that Taylef is customer-oriented, so whatever you find in today's network element drivers is a result of some of their previous customers' feature requests. So they will always sort of, in a business process, they will say, yes, we can do it, but they will provide additional functionality on demand. And they would prefer to do that for you because they have experts doing that. They do all the testing, and eventually when you want to provision your service, you will have the necessary functionality in the element driver. However, that doesn't stop you from doing it yourself. So with the product, you get the tools, you get the network element driver, which is a small or a large YAML file, and you can just open it either with a text editor, or you have some dedicated products that make it your life easier through Eclipse or some other products that allow you to do that, and you can modify it yourself. But there is, as I said, a slight additional learning curve to learn how to properly map those models into the actual CLI. Because the network element driver, if we talk about Cisco CLI, for example, the part that connects to a router via SSH, that's done in Java, so there is some code. And when I looked at the code, it really reflects what my script is doing, for example. So the first thing you do if you automate, you connect to a router, make sure that there is no garbage coming out of it, because it can makes your life more difficult. And this Java part does exactly the same. So it connects, disables pagers, terminal monitor, and stuff like that. And then it starts executing commands. But this is the nitty-gritty details of how you communicate with the device. This has already been done. But on top of that, everything else is controlled through the YAML module. Which you are free to augment any way you want, but you just need to learn it. So I would say that some learning experience, some try and fail initially, but once you get the hang of it, it gets much, much easier.
Since we're down to the nitty-gritty details of the Java code, we mentioned in the beginning that the solution itself is transactional. It implements network-wide transactions. And probably you know that iOS devices have no such thing as netcom support or transaction support.
Oh, some devices support
the protocol
some
is
interesting
there, yes.
variant of netcom.
Yeah, but it's not really what we're going for. So the Java code also needs to take care of things like rollback, aborting transactions, revert transactions. And in a sense, NCS itself then is able to imitate netcom flagged functionality towards northbound interfaces like OSS as network management systems. And from the perspective of a northbound application, the Cisco IIS device with no native netcom support basically acts as a transactional device with full netcom support. And that's also one of the nice things I found out about the product.
So if nothing else, you can use that product as a netconf proxy.
For example, this is how actually TLF started, by a product called ConfD, mm-hmm. which is basically a netconf agent which was built on top or built into the operating system of network elements. And you also have the possibility of doing that. So you could transfer the ConfD code into your iOS code, compile all that together, and then you have a full netconf.
Well, actually, you know, when you use this net, that ConfD part is local on the NCS.
Exactly.
So the core, the engine, is really using netconf sort of internally to communicate with the iOS device, and then this one really translates that netconf into the CLI commands.
Oh, so when you configure the iOS device through NCS, first you have to map the service definition into device configuration, and then that device configuration is sent internally as a netconf call.
Yeah, I mean, the engine understands that netconf is really designed for this kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So the primary or the ideal environment is when, which you were a bit skeptical before, but to have really netconf all around, southbound toward network devices, northbound towards other management products that need to be integrated. So this would be, let's say, the ideal, because it actually does natively support this kind of network-wide transactions, so that you can easily also control whether a transaction was successful, and if one atom fails, then you have to roll back everything. And as you know, with iOS, this is difficult to do.
I know.
Yeah.
And in that case,
but with iOS XR, it's trivial, for example.
Yeah, because
it supports,
yeah.
Yeah. No, not netconf. We're still using, so the net for iOS XR is also CLI-based. But when you communicate with the device, it does have the candidate configuration. So you create a configuration
session.
So it has
commit and rollback.
Yeah, and you have a two-stage commit as well, which is something that is the preferred environment for netconf. So that even after supplying the entire configuration set, when you say commit, what is there to ensure that you didn't just cut off yourself? So you also have that final commit that says, okay, we committed the configuration, it's up and running, we're happy with it, now let's finalize. Because in the worst case, you can do something that will cut off the management product from the device, which means that you need to somehow roll back. You know what I used in my script that I described
reload
earlier?
Reload after 10.
Reload in 10 minutes, yeah. Exactly. Or actually it was 5, I think.
Or whatever, yeah.
Here you have a timer, I think, by default, if I'm not mistaken, it's 1 minute. So after 1 minute, it just rolls back automatically. So even between iOS XR and iOS, there is a huge difference. So it makes life easier for whoever is creating the network element driver. But if you have a pure netconf implementation, then all you need to care about is the model for the configuration itself. Everything else more or less fits into place.
Okay, so let's assume you don't want to modify the element configuration driver or the configuration.
Let's assume that all the functionality is there or that Cisco has provided for you.
Which, by the way, is probably a really bad idea to modify the low-level code, because then you're off the main track.
Yeah, you have to think about future upgrades.
Exactly.
When TLF/Cisco provides you with new updated functionality.
You will merge
you
your code
about,
into
exactly.
that every time they provide you with an upgrade. But at least it's text files, right?
It's all text files, so you're really free to do whatever you want. It gives you all the flexibility that you wish. But of course, it's up to you if you create a mess of things, because then you will have a hard time going to a new version, upgrading to a new net. So.
Yeah, but because it's a text file, you have at least a fighting chance if you use a proper
proper versioning
source, yeah.
and source control. You know what you have added, what you have deleted, stuff
exactly.
like that.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so let's assume that the infrastructure is there.
Supports what we need, yeah.
Now, you want to add some services on top of that. And you said that out-of-the-box NCS doesn't have any
exactly.
services.
So, by the way, yeah, as we mentioned, there are two, let's say, user interfaces. One is the CLI. So you access it via SSH just like you would any other CLI-based device. So for any CLI junkie, like most of us network guys, you just SSH into the server and you get a CLI, which surprisingly supports two most common flavors of CLIs, Cisco
and
Juniper.
The industry standard CLI and the Juno CLI.
Exactly. So you can choose which one you prefer. The only difference is that you cannot go directly into configuration and interface. You have to think about the fact that you're actually on a single node, but you can configure multiple different nodes. So you quickly learn that anything that you will do, it will be exactly the same command, except you have to put the device in between to select which device. That would mean the sort of element management that you can do, which, by the way, this was not designed to. You can do that, but it was primarily designed for service provisioning.
So initially, out of the box, you can configure all the devices through CLI by saying, I want to configure this thing on that particular device.
Everything that is in the data models that we mentioned, either what comes out of the box or what is added through network element drivers or what is added through your custom services. Mm-hmm. So any young file that you encounter will be visible through the CLI to some degree. So you can configure it. Any configuration item that is modeled will be visible and accessible. And for GUI junkies, you can go to a web portal, which provides you exactly the same thing. All configuration items are visible through the graphical user interface over through a web browser. So whenever you add your new service, you will say, okay, this is my service. Those are service parameters. So when you do that, when you deploy this service model, in that the services that was initially empty will now contain your both graphical and CLI-based configuration options.
I would add the third junkies type, which are software developers. All of what Bustian was talking about is also automatically available through all of the APIs, which are REST, JSON RPC. You have SNMP if you want to use it. You probably don't want to, but it's there. Netconf. I think those are the major ones.
Yeah, and scripts.
Yeah, but
one of the first things I did, I tested how Perl can be integrated with it, and no problem.
Well, integrating a RESTful service with Perl is like a piece of cake.
No, but you can also augment the CLI. You can, let's say, define a CLI command that will call your script. So
you can have Perl callbacks.
Even, let's say, out of the box, I think you get something like six CLI commands, which are actually not native built-in, but actually called external scripts.
But imagine if you extended the system with a lot of stubs, stub scripts, stub subroutines, you get the same thing that you started with 10 years ago.
Yes.
So you don't want to do that. Well, you try not to do that.
It depends on what you're trying to do.
Yeah.
But yeah, there are the proper ways of going about it, and there are
the other ways.
Yeah.
So out of the box, you get the CLI and API and GUI. So you just bought yourself a very, very reassuringly expensive SSH multiplexer and GUI interface to configuration on devices without web browser. What else can you do?
Okay. As I said, the SSH is for, you know, CLI junkies. I wouldn't say that is the primary. Typically, you will use it when you design services. So when you design services, let's say in a lab environment, not in a production environment, you would be using either the CLI or the GUI extensively for the design purpose, the implementation, deployment, testing, and stuff like that. But in a production environment, you probably wouldn't touch it that often. You wouldn't mm-hmm. be loading packages. So everything you do is in a form of a package. Package contains, some configuration templates, young models. That didn't sound right, but okay. And Java code, for example. And all that is a package. You compile it, you install it. So that part of the task can either be very trivial if you have a simple service to implement, or it can involve some complexity where you have to do some coding for integration purposes. But I wouldn't say that the CLI is, let's say, it makes your life as a designer simple, but in a production environment,
you wouldn't use it.
Engineers, when they need to troubleshoot something, they would probably still log in directly to the devices and do troubleshooting there.
So you implement your services with these add-on packages. Do you get any default packages that you could just take and use?
The packages that you get that you will install first are the network element drivers. So even the element drivers, let's say with the installation, depends on the version, what is actually bundled with the installation package. I think you get something like a few NETs, NET being short for network element drivers. So for instance, if you have a Cisco environment, the first thing that you would install are the iOS and iOS XR packages, so that you now can communicate with these types of devices. If you have Junipers, then you would install Juniper network element drivers. So once you have the element drivers, those are also packages. Now your NCS is capable of understanding the language of those devices that it is supposed to manage. Now the next step is create your own services. So whatever services, let's say, you need to develop, you have to design the YANG model and then map those service parameters into configuration parameters. So you have.
So where did you start? What was the first service you implemented?
Well, I was a bit ambitious. So the first time I touched the system, I said, hey, I'm going to go directly for VPLS. And
Good choice.
Yeah, good choice. Then I figured out that at the time there was some functionality missing in the net. So I went back all the way to simple. And then I said, okay, let's configure an IP address and a loopback. And I was very happy when I managed to do that, and then I went back to more complex stuff. So I did both NETs and service models, and it's nice to know what capabilities there are. As I said, it takes some time, it takes to get experience. Don't expect to install it and be able to do magic stuff in the first day.
So your first service was, let's configure IP address on the loopback interface.
Exactly. Yeah.
Mine was configure a VLAN.
Which is actually probably more usable than these other guys.
Yeah, I started with, you know, what I hate to do when you have a large network. And there are a lot of people out there that are still going around the switches and configuring new VLANs than putting them on trunks. And I was always thinking there has to be a better way to do this. I mean, this is just wasting time. So
totally agree.
That led me to the idea, okay, let's create network-wide VLAN service activation package, something like that.
So what does that service do? You just say, I need this VLAN on these ports, and it happens on the ports and on the uplinks and everything.
Basically, that's the idea, yeah. But in the end, it's dependent on your topology. Mm-hmm. One of the things we forgot to mention, and I think it's important for everybody, is that NCS is never topology aware. So the product itself doesn't know anything about your network topology, either layer 1, layer 3.
So it doesn't do topology discovery or anything?
No.
Okay.
You could write your own package to do that.
Of course.
You could write a northbound application that would use that information, but that intelligence would have to reside outside the NCS itself. So I was basically going with the typical Cisco topology, core distribution access, and I said, okay, when I create a new VLAN, it has to be created with the core switches, has to be added to the trunks, to the distribution layer, and then finally it pops up on the access switches. And all that I have to say is which access switches I want this VLAN to be on. But I kind of hard-coded my topology in there. So that's maybe not the best idea.
I'm guessing that what you did was you said, well, whenever I add a VLAN, I have to add it on all core and distribution switches, and I will only add it to the uplinks of the access switches that actually need that VLAN.
Exactly.
Which is probably how I would do it. And that also means that when you add new devices to NCS, when you add a new switch and you say, well, this switch will now be managed by NCS, you have to say, this is a core switch or this is a distribution switch.
Yeah, so as soon as your topology changes, you have to specify the device type. And you also need to specify it when you do the service. So it's, you need to say, okay, the service needs to know. And this is where we get to the interesting part. We started with saying when we did the training, when we look at the literature, you basically get the message that services should be independent from the devices. So there should be no dependency between the service model and the device model. What happens after a while when you work with the product, you quickly find out that you will have to basically reference some of the device specifics inside the service model. Like if you wanted to have a service that supports loopback configuration on iOS and iOS XR, you would have to touch eventually that in the service model itself, saying, look,
what, It depends if I may interrupt.
Sure.
So if you're just configuring a loopback, let's say from a service perspective, whether you're configuring a VLAN as in your case or a loopback in my case, the service model can be completely vendor agnostic. But if you want to somehow, let's say, retrieve what are currently available loopbacks or currently configured VLANs, then the model is different in iOS, iOS XR, Junos. So there you can no longer maintain this agnostic approach. You actually have to address different device types separately.
Yes.
So in some cases, it's really vendor agnostic. In some cases, you actually have to go into the details about how different devices represent some data differently.
If you want to implement a totally new service in a totally greenfield environment, then the theory and the reality sort of match. So you could start with data model, and in the data model you have the parameters, and the network element drivers would take those parameters and transform them into device configurations, and you push that out. But if you have a brownfield deployment where you already have VLANs or you already have the loopback interfaces, and now you want to import that into NCS, no?
It depends on how you actually design your service, how you integrate it with other systems where you have, let's say, some inventory database that contains some information. So in our example, we are playing around, for instance, with something that maybe in a production environment you would try to avoid altogether. So for instance, if you are trying to reference physical interfaces on an edge router, now, of course, for the operator, for the view of the operator, he may not even need to know whether it's a fast internet or gigabit internet or something. He just selects an index from the inventory that is currently available for new customer deployment. What is in the backend, you don't care. And how that is then transformed into the actual gigabit interface 0/5 or something may even be invisible in the service model. But if you create something where, you know, you want the operator to choose from the available interfaces, well, where do you get them? You have to now go into the data that is only available through the network element driver. So the model for the network element driver can provide you this information, which is, of course, will be different in different types of devices. So it all depends on how you design your service, what you want to expose either to the operator or to the northbound API. That will determine whether it's enough for you to model just the service parameters, whether you need to reference some other data structures inside NCS, or whether you actually have to go all the way into the data that is accessible through the specifics of individual nets.
So if you just want to say, I need a interface, that's easy. But if you want to say, well, the customer is already plugged in, and I know which interface the customer is plugged in, and now I need to pull the list of interfaces and present that to the operator, then things get complex.
Let me give you a simple example. When I did my loopback, you know, my service parameter was a number from 0 to 100, let's say.
That was the loopback interface.
That was the loopback interface number, just the number. So what the operator would need to enter is a number. So if he enters ABC, the Yang syntax allows me to validate it. So it's an integer as a type. And I use a range that allows me to only enter from 0 to 100. So before he can even go through from the JavaScript-based web interface, he won't be able to supply anything that doesn't fit the model. So when he supplies 50, fine. Now it can travel all the way to the device. So when I commit the change, the service instance will be deployed and my loopback 50 will be created. Now, on the other hand, if I do gigabit interface 0/50, well, how do I know what is a valid range on box A, box B, box C? How do I know that this box is a Cisco, if it's a Juniper? So if I type in configure an IP address on gigabit interface 0/50, if I don't have any checks, which of course I cannot statically have them because every device has a different range of currently available interfaces, then the only thing I can do is hope for the best. And the NCS, not knowing what the limits are, will try to provision it. And only at the stage when it is tried to be committed on the device itself, the device says, sorry, this interface doesn't exist. And it cannot be created, of course, because it's actual hardware. So then the error comes back and you get a failed service instance deployment. So either checks already at the user interface or in the end when the router will do syntax or semantic check or...
So what you're saying is you want it to be more user-friendly.
User-friendliness means that you are reducing human error. And that's one of the important parts.
Yeah. So if you are perfectly happy with your operator specifying the invalid interface name and the transaction failing, then you don't have to be concerned with the specifics of individual devices. But if you want to limit the operator to what the device actually contains, then yes, you have to dig deep into.
So just give me again the same example, layer 3 MPLS EPM. So you can have a huge form where the operator needs to enter the route target number, the route distinguisher number, the interface for the CE connection, the routing protocol options, the neighbor IP address. You can create a form that will have 50 items.
And then you send it.
Now imagine how many errors there will be, how many overlapping stuff will happen. On the other hand, what you really need to do, select a customer, select some service options, which will be purely text-based, list box, stuff like that. Everything else automatically happens in the background. And for some things to happen automatically in a reliable manner, you have to do some coding. Sometimes the service model will not be completely vendor agnostic, so it will have to understand whether it's speaking to an iOS box, a Junos box. So you have a huge range. Again, to reiterate what Marco said, it's a framework that's very powerful and it allows you to play around. Some discipline is required, of course.
Some assembly required, said IKEA.
Yeah.
Another Swedish company, by the way.
But you also, with IKEA, I've seen that you sometimes get some extra products that they tell you to just throw away.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, extra items.
Yeah, just in case.
Just in case.
As you can hear, we couldn't possibly stop talking about the interesting features and technical details of TailF and CS, but I'm positive that you wouldn't survive another half an hour of our discussions. So let's stop it right here, and we'll continue next week with the second part of this podcast. In the meantime, if you want to know more about SDN, go to sdn.ipspace.net. A page full of resources dedicated to SDN, from training to books, blog posts, free webinars, and so on. And we'll be back in a few days. And if you want to follow us, go to podcast.ipspace.net and subscribe to the podcast feed.